Hi there, and welcome to the Cory Doctorow podcast. I'm Cory Doctorow, and this is my podcast. I'm reading to you from this week from the Peter Gutman Cost Analysis of Windows Content Protection, or as it's sometimes known, the Suicide Note paper. This will be the last installment, the fourth installment of me reading Peter's wonderful, wonderful paper. I saw some of you this week down in San Diego. Had a very nice time there. I did four talks in 2 days, so I was a little bushed. And then I came home yesterday and had a lunch meeting and then a 4 o'clock thing. And so I'm just a little bushed. It always seems like I feel this way come Sunday, like I've just been running around ragged. But it's all worth it, too, because I had a really nice time meeting all those great people in San Diego. I also got a very nice surprise this week, which is that the Locus Award shortlist came out for the best science fiction of 2006, and two of my novelettes, iRobot and When Sysadmins Ruled the Earth, were selected for the final five, and I'll know soon whether or not they win. And I think that's in no small part thanks to you folks who listen to the podcast, who I expect were helping get that onto the ballot by voting for it. And for that, I thank you very, very much, and I appreciate your support, and I'll endeavor to be worthy of it. I'm working still on this story you've heard me talk about a couple of times now, There's a Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow, Now is the Best Time of Your Life story. It's just breached 11,000 out of probably 27,000 words, somewhere in that range. And in a couple of weeks, I'm going to start reading it to you. I should have enough in the can then that I can read it to you without running out of material and having to take a week off. I hope, anyway. And in the meantime, next week, I'm going to read you a passage from Little Brother, my forthcoming novel about hacker kids who fight the Department of Homeland Security. Book that's already been getting some very nice early notices, even though it's not out for a year, from some of my early readers. So I look forward to reading that to you. I think it's a nice piece, the passage I'm going to read. It's something I've read a couple of times aloud now to very good response. Anyway, without further ado, here is the last installment of Peter Gutman's Cost Analysis of Windows Vista Content Protection, read by Cory Doctorow. Acknowledgements. This document was put together with input from various sources, including a number that requested I keep their contributions anonymous. In some cases, I've simplified or rewritten some details to ensure that the original, potentially traceable wording of non-public documents wasn't used. Because it wasn't always possible to go back to the sources and verify exact details, it's possible that there may be some inaccuracies present here, which I'm sure I'll hear about. In addition to the material presented here, I'd be interested in getting further input both from people at Microsoft involved in implementing the content protection measures and from device vendors who are required to implement the hardware and driver software measures. I know from Microsoft sources that many of them care deeply about providing the best possible audio-video user experience for Vista users and are quite distressed at having to spend time implementing large amounts of anti-functionality when it's already hard enough to get things running smoothly without the intentional crippling. I'm always open to further output, and will keep all contributions confidential unless you give me permission to repeat something. If you're concerned about traceability, grab a disposable account at Yahoo, Gmail, or some other similar provider and contact me through that. If you're worried about being identified via the machine that you connect to the email provider with, use an internet cafe to send the message. Just use standard common sense precautions. If you want to encrypt things, my PGP key is linked from my homepage. In case the hints above aren't obvious enough, if you work for NVIDIA, ATI, VIA, SIS, Intel, I'd really like to get your comments on how all this is affecting you. Sources. Because this write-up started out as a private discussion in email, a number of the sources used were non-public. The best public sources I know of are Output Content Protection and Windows Vista from WHDC, Windows Longhorn Output Content Protection from WinHack, How to Implement Windows Vista Content Output Protection from WinHack, Protected Media Path and Driver Interoperability Requirements from WinHack. Note that the cryptography requirements have changed since some of the information was published. SHA-1 has been deprecated in favor of SHA-256 and SHA-512, and public keys seem to be uniformly set at 2048 bits in place of the mixture of 1024-bit and 2048-bit bits mentioned in the presentations. An excellent analysis from one of the hardware vendors involved in this comes from ATI in the form of Digital Media Content Protection from WinHack. This points out, in the form of PowerPoint bullet points, the manifold problems associated with Vista's content protection measures, with the repeated mention of increased development costs, degraded performance, and the phrase increased costs passed on to consumers pervading the entire presentation like a mantra. In addition, there have been quite a few write-ups, although not quite going into this much detail as this document, in magazines both online and in print, one example being PC World's feature article, "Will Your PC Run Windows Vista?" that covers this in the appropriately titled section, "Multimedia and Chains," and Computer World's article, "Vista and More, Piecing Together Microsoft's DRM Puzzle." Audience reactions to these proposals at WinHack are covered in Longhorn, Tough Trail to PC Digital Media, published in EE Times. Unfortunately, you need to be a subscriber to read this, but you may be able to find accessible cached copies using your favorite search engines. The EFF has an overview of the effects of Vista's revocation mechanisms in Protected Media Path, Component Revocation, and Windows Driver Lockdown. Use, Modification, and Redistribution. This document is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution 2.5 license. This means that you can copy, distribute, display, and perform the work, and make derivative works, provided that you credit the original author and provide a link back to the original work at the URL given in the title. To quote the Creative Commons site, this license let others distribute, remix, tweak, and build upon your work, even commercially, as long as they credit you for the original creation. This is the most accommodating of licenses offered in terms of what other can do with your works. Appendices and footnotes. The more formal part of this document ends here. The following sections contain various informal comments, thoughts, and other odds and ends. For people doing translations of this document, it's probably not worth trying to translate these sections. Mini FAQ. This document seems to produce various reactions that come up repeatedly. To respond to the more frequently expressed views, I've added this mini FAQ. This is just Microsoft bashing. It's bad technology bashing. If it had been done by Linus Torvalds, Steve Jobs, Alan Cox, or Theodore Rott, I'd have said the same thing about it. As far as I'm concerned, computers are tools to get a job done and not a platform for religious wars, and if something's bad, I'll say so regardless of who's doing it. Just for the record, I run various versions of Windows on, counting, 7 of my machines. The rest are a mixture of Linux, FreeBSD, and occasionally Solaris and QNX. So I'd be a rather unlikely Microsoft detractor. I have their software all over my machines. This is a biased write-up. Perhaps, but then I challenge you to read any of the specifications given in the sources section above and write a positive analysis of Vista's content protection. Someone has to point out these problems, and it happened to be me in this case. But I think anyone with technical skills who reads the relevant documents would come to a similar conclusion. This is all a pile of FUD. The process that leads to comments like this tends to be, 1. Quickly skim through the document, 2. Decide that it sounds a bit implausible, possibly even before performing step 1, 3. Post a rant saying that it's FUD. To pick one particular example, a Dig reader's reaction to the section of text that says there isn't sufficient CPU power available for both decompression and encryption was, "I'm sorry, where does this come from? You do realize that this is completely uncited and very likely wrong? Entire paragraphs that follow are based on this magical detail pulled out of thin air. I'm no fan of this asinine DRM bullshit, but these scenarios and postulates put forth in the article are complete rubbish." Referring to the very first source listed in the sources section shows that this is picked not from thin air, but from Microsoft's own documentation. Quote, "The problem with regular AES is that it takes about 20 CPU clocks to encrypt each byte. This is okay for compressed or semi-compressed video, but for multiple HD uncompressed cases, it's too much even for a 2006 processor," referring to the fastest CPU available at the time the document was written. And then again, quote, "In the case of premium content, whether video can play back smoothly when using regular AES with uncompressed video will be a function of the resolution of the uncompressed video and the power of the processor. It is unlikely to work well in 2006 for uncompressed HD premium content." End quote. If you don't believe what you've read here, go back to Microsoft's own documentation and read that. In fact, read the Microsoft documents no matter what you believe, because they're quite scary. If you still think it's FUD, then you can at least post informed comments about it. Microsoft is only doing this because Hollywood or the music industry are forcing them to. "We were only following orders" has historically worked rather poorly as an excuse, and it doesn't work too well here either. This is just an example of the Dank defense. The Dank defense, as reported by former Assistant U.S. Attorney Andrew Grosso, was used by someone who was picked up carrying a shotgun in a park at night. With 6 previous violent crime convictions on his record, he explained his presence in the park by saying that a man called Dank had held a gun to his head and forced him to carry the shotgun. When the police turned up, Dank ran away, leaving him holding the bag, or at least the shotgun. As the assistant U.S. attorney put it, the jurors chose not to believe the defendant's story. In Vista's case, we're being asked to believe that Hollywood is holding a gun to Microsoft's head and forcing them to cripple their flagship product and inflict all manner of pain and suffering on their business partners and customers, and Microsoft has no choice but to comply. I choose not to believe the defendant's story. While it's convenient to paint an industry that sues 12-year-old children, grandmothers, families with no computer or internet access, and even tries to sue the dead as the scapegoat, there's no Dank holding a gun to Microsoft's head to force them to do this. There is no evidence whatsoever to show that crippling your flagship product and seriously annoying your business partners and your entire customer base will leave you better off financially than being unable to play a few HD movies, which is what Microsoft is asking us to believe. The content industry is desperate to get its content onto PCs, and it would have been quite easy for Microsoft to say, "Here's what we'll do with Vista, take it or leave it. We won't seriously cripple our own and our business partners' products just to suit your whims." In other words, they could make it clear to Hollywood who's the tail and who's the dog. Here's an illustrative story about what can happen when the content industry tail tries to wag the dog. About 10 to 15 years ago, music companies told a bunch of New Zealand TV stations that they had to pay fees in order to screen music videos. The TV stations disagreed, saying that they were providing free advertising for the music companies, and if they didn't like that, then they'd simply stop playing music videos. So they stopped playing all music videos. After a few weeks, cracks started to appear in the music as the music companies realized just how badly they needed the TV channels. One of the music companies bought an entire primetime advertising block at phenomenal cost. This wasn't a single 30-second slot, but every slot and an entire primetime ad break just to play one single new music video. Shortly afterwards, music videos reappeared on TV. The details of the settlement were never made public, but I imagine it consisted of a bunch of music execs on their knees begging the TV stations to start playing music videos again, and let's please never bring this matter up again. It's the same with Microsoft. If the content industry needs them as badly or more badly than Microsoft needs, it's the same with Microsoft. The content industry needs them as badly or more badly than Microsoft needs the content industry. Claiming that they're only following orders from Hollywood is a red herring. If Microsoft declined to implement this stuff, Hollywood would just have to give in because they can't afford to lock themselves out of 95% of the market, in the same way that music companies couldn't afford to cut their primary advertising channel. Microsoft fought the U.S. government to a standstill in its antitrust case. They faced down a superpower to protect their products. And yet now we're supposed to believe that they jeopardized their flagship product because a few film studios asked them to. I don't buy it. The far more likely motivation for why Microsoft is doing this is given in final thoughts above. This overstates the potential risks. I work in the field of computer security. It's my job to perform risk assessments of computer technology, and that's what this write-up is. If I worked in marketing, it'd be my job to tell you how wonderful Vista's content handling is. Since I don't work in marketing, what you're reading is an analysis of the potential risks of Vista's content protection technology. If you go to a lawyer and say, "I want to do X, what are the potential risks from a legal point of view?" they'll tell you the potential risks of X. If you go to a security person and ask the same question, they'll tell you the potential risks, but from a security point of view. The intent is to inform potential Vista users of possible risks and allow them to make their own decisions. Some of the risks may seem obscure, but it's up to you to decide what their impact on you might be and whether they apply to you or not. You're just upset because you can no longer steal content under Vista. Yes, someone really did send me email with this claim in it. It's silly enough that I had to include it, for the amusement value. Open questions. There are a number of open questions about Vista's content protection that probably won't be able to be answered until some months after its wide deployment, when users can report on real-life experiences because no one seems to know how certain things will work. If anyone has more information on these, please let me know. Question 1. How easy is it to get HD content around outside of the Vista content protection? The block diagram in the specification documents show the layering as user space application, then Vista content protection interface, then Vista content playback subsystem, then Vista device drivers, then the device hardware. Reading the specs, user space applications are expected to call down into the Vista content protection interface to playback content. One document actually uses the metaphor of the user space application acting merely as a remote control for the Vista content protection and playback system. The question is, can a user space application that chooses to opt out perform an end run around the high-level Vista interface and go direct to the low-level interface to get its content out without Vista's content protection getting in the way? User feedback on Microsoft's own forums indicate that even using third-party playback software like the NVIDIA or Cyberlink decoders instead of the Vista one will result in playback being disabled when, in this case, the Vista Media Center trial license expired. Question 2. How will all of this affect users who want to prepare HD content, protect it or not? Given the intent of Vista's content protection is to ensure that no HD content ever leaves the system in usable form, how do you prepare the HD content? More importantly, since Vista happens to be a multitasking OS, how do you guarantee that your HD content is being prepared, the presence of some other protected content somewhere in the system doesn't cause it to be silently degraded for protection purposes? Just how deep does the protection go? If it's on a per-task or even per-thread level, then any crosstalk or cross-thread mechanism, e.g. process thread injection, can be used to compromise the content protection. On the other hand, if it's all your content are belong to us, whenever protected content is present, then innocent content will be degraded along with protected content. Question number 3. If you build it, they will come. Once the DRM mechanisms are in place, there's every reason to believe that any kind of content subject to any kind of copyright will try and take advantage of it. After all, why not? The tools are there, there's no reason not to use them. We already have so-called enterprise DRM and information rights management that's intended to control access to documents like Microsoft Word, PDF documents, CAD files, and so on. About 20 years ago, during the heyday of the DoD Orange Book, this stuff was known as ORCON, an originator-controlled access control. Now that DRM is integrated into Vista as a core technology, there's no knowing how far this can be taken in the future. Indeed, Bill Rosenblatt, managing editor of Jupiter Media's DRM Watch, sees enterprise DRM as a major growth area for Vista's content protection technology. What will computing be like in a few years' time? Question number 4. I've read both on the web and received via email endless reports of people unable to play HD DVD and Blu-ray content on Windows PCs, both Vista Beta and XP. Has anyone actually been able to play HD DVD or Blu-ray content, i.e. the material that Vista classes as premium content, under Windows at HD quality levels, i.e. without resorting to hooking up an analog monitor or something similar? If so, what HD drive, player software, graphics card, and monitor did you use? So far, alongside a great many reports of people being unable to play any HD content at all, I've received one report of someone who managed to play back HD DVDs. Equipment used was an Xbox 360, functioning as the HD DVD player, an NVIDIA 8800 GTX with HDCP, a top-of-the-line graphics card currently selling for around $600, and a Westinghouse 37W3 with HDCP and on the DVI input, a 37-inch LCD currently selling for about $1,200. Microsoft's response. In mid-January 2007, Microsoft responded to some of the points in this write-up. Some of the material was new and interesting, for example, clarifying what actually gets revoked when a driver revocation occurs, but other parts seem more likely to have come from Wagner Engstrom, Microsoft's PR firm, than program manager Dave Marsh. The Inquirer wasn't too impressed by it either. I've updated the body text based on some of the clarifications, but for things that aren't directly relevant to the main text, which means the PR spin items, I'll comment on them here. The important technical clarifications that affected the main body of the write-up are 1. Exactly what happens when a driver is revoked, 2. What happens when a tilt bit triggers, and 3. Which portions of the output are affected when content degradation takes place. the content protection specifications were previously somewhat unclear about these various consequences of the protection mechanisms, so it's good to have this clarification on exactly what occurs. Since the portions I'll comment on here are PR rather than technical content, the following section is an attempt to respond directly and to try to unravel the PR spin. The technical documents have been integrated into the main body of this write-up. Do such things as HFS, the hardware functionality scan, affect the ability of the open source community to write a driver? Quote, no. HFS uses additional chip characteristics other than those needed to write a driver. HFS requirements should not prevent the disclosure of all the information needed to write drivers. End quote. This claim is directly contradicted by a document by the same author that states, quote, such tests could involve loading a surface with an image and then getting the chip to apply various visual effects to the image and reporting back to the resulting pixels, end quote. And then later on, the internal workings of the graphics chip must be kept secret such that a hacker building an emulator could not find out the required information, end quote. So this document, the primary reference for Vista's content protection, states exactly the opposite of what's said in Microsoft's response, namely that standard chip functionality, in this case graphics rendering in a GPU, is exercised for HFS, and that the device details have to be kept secret to prevent someone emulating that functionality. Will the Windows Vista Content Protection Board robustness recommendations increase the cost of graphics cards and reduce the number of build options? Quote, everything was moving to be integrated on one chip anyway, and this is independent of the content protection recommendations. Given that cost, particularly chip cost, is most heavily influenced by volume, it is actually better to avoid making these things optional through the use of external chips. End quote. While it's certainly tempting to quote the Slashdot response, whose ass was this assertion pulled out of, I'll provide a bit more context. This comment, that the overhead of Vista's content protection will lead to cheaper hardware, comes from a Microsoft product manager responsible for the content protection. An ATI product manager responsible for producing the actual hardware says, quote, these costs are passed on to the consumer, end quote. Quote, this cost is passed on to all consumers, end quote. Quote, this cost is passed on to purchasers of multimedia PCs, end quote. Quote, costs are passed on to consumers, end quote. Quote, costs are passed on to consumers, especially early adopters, end quote. I'll let you decide whom to believe. Another problem with this unification of hardware is that it leads to problems like the erroneous triggering of content protection measures that's described in decreased system reliability. Will Windows Vista content protection features increased CPU resource consumption? Quote, yes, however, the use of additional CPU cycles is inevitable as the PC provides consumers with additional functionality. End quote. Note the careful use of the term additional functionality rather than enhanced functionality. Vista Content Protection actually provides reduced functionality, as the main body of this write-up goes into in great detail. So this comment is pretty much confirming what's in the write-up. Vista users have already complained about the excessive CPU usage of a Vista component called the Media Foundation Protected Pipeline. Here's a screenshot of it in action. Complaining of pegging the CPU at 100% load on startup and then staying at 10-20% of CPU during playback. One user complained of it consuming 50% of the CPU on his 3 GHz Pentium 4 machine under Vista, while there had been no such problems under XP. Another user observed that this process also runs for DivX and Xvid files, implying that it's always active even if no premium content is present. Another DRM-enabled piece of Windows Audio, the somewhat problematic AudioDG Vista Audio Engine host, has similar resource problems. The exact nature of this Media Foundation protected pipeline is somewhat mysterious. The executable image is mfpmp.exe, but there's no file of that name present in Vista, which implies that it's being generated on the fly by another executable. The process only shows up with Windows Media Player, not with other players like VLC or Winamp, and even then only when certain content like MP3s or video is played. It doesn't show up for older and simpler content like WAV files, but then again, it does show up for non-protected content. Karel Donk has done some further testing with it and reports that, while playing an MP3 file in WMP, I ended the MFPMP exe process and the sound stopped, but WMP still worked. I then pressed stop and WMP and then play again, and the MP3 file started playing, but this time through WMPplayer.exe itself. It probably detected that something was wrong with the MFPMP.exe and fell back to another playback path, I think. Can't be sure. A few seconds later, MFPMP.exe did appear again, but with zero CPU usage as the file was playing through WMP. I had to restart WMP in order for the MP3 to play back again through MFPMP.exe. Can others confirm this? I don't run Vista yet, but if this is true, then it would seem to disconfirm Microsoft's claims that content protection doesn't interfere with playback and is only active when premium content is present. A way to put Microsoft's response into perspective is to rephrase this, the question to, will viruses increase CPU resource consumption? To which the answer is also yes. However, the use of additional CPU cycles is inevitable as the PC provides consumers with additional functionality like spamming, phishing site hosting, and so on. What about SPDF audio connections? Will component video outputs be disabled by Windows Vista content protection? Quote, similar to SPDIF, the Windows Vista does not require component video outputs to be disabled, but rather enables the enforcement of usage policy set by content owners or service providers, including with respect to output restrictions and image constraint. End quote. So that would be a yes then. This is another one of the sections that seems likely to have had Wagner Enstrom influence. Will echo cancellation work less well for premium content? Quote, we believe that Windows Vista provides applications with access to sufficient information to successfully build high-quality echo cancellation functionality. End quote. The reason why I brought up the issue of echo cancellation in the first place is that a document by Dave Marsh, the same person who wrote the above text, states that content protection interferes with echo cancellation. The above text says it doesn't. These statements can't both be right. Will Windows Vista audio content protection mean that HDMI outputs can't be shown as SPDIF outputs? Quote, it is better if they show as different codec types, as it allows the difference to be reflected through in the UI, thus providing the user help with their configuration and creating a better user experience. The user wants to know the difference between HDMI and SPDIF, as they are different physical connectors. End quote. From reading the Slashdot comments on this, it's nice to see that I wasn't the only one who thought of Orwell when they read this reply. Quote, war is peace, slavery is freedom. We have always been at war with the consumer / pirates. End quote. This is another one of those Twilight Zone comments that seem to crop up again and again when discussing Vista content protection. The HDMI designers had very good reasons for making HDMI's audio SPDIF compatible, as discussed in the section Elimination of Unified Drivers above. Arguing that creating an artificial difference between the two because it gives users more control is like arguing that manual gearboxes are better because they provide more control. This may technically be the case, but unless you're an F1 driver, you're probably not going to appreciate this very much. Less is more. War is peace. A further Twilight Zone DRM comment comes from Macrovision, the company that provides the copy protection system that prevented a filmmaker from viewing his own movies, which claimed that DRM increases, not decreases, consumer value. John Gruber has helpfully provided a translation of Microsoft's comments from PRSpeak into plain English that you and I can understand, and he has a link here. Do content protection requirements mean that graphics chips have to provide hardware acceleration for video decode? Quote, no, the Vista's content protection requirements do not require that graphics hardware include hardware acceleration for decode for many years, but such support is highly recommended to improve the user experience for HD content. Like the comment about echo cancellation above, my source for this was also the original document by Dave Marsh. Here's the text straight from the original document. Quote, it is a PVP-UAB requirement that discrete graphics chips implement at least IDCT and motion comp decode acceleration for MPEG-2 and Windows Media version 9/VC1, end quote. As with the comments on HFS and echo cancellation, these statements can't both be right. There are other minor nits with Microsoft's response, but it's minor stuff and not worth picking through here. About the author. I'm a researcher in the Department of Computer Science at the University of Auckland, New Zealand, working on the design analysis of cryptographic security architectures. In the past, I've helped write the popular PGP encryption program and have authored a number of papers and RFCs on security and encryption, including the X.509 style guide for certificates and the Godzilla security tutorial, as well as cryptographic security architecture, design, and verification, published by Springer Verlag. Most of my time is taken up with development and support of the open source CryptLib security toolkit. This gives me a lot of exposure to industry practices and trends, so I'd say my background is a 50-50 mix of industry and academia. In my spare time, I engage my obsession with photography, and if I had just a little bit more spare time the link would probably take you to a proper Flickr gallery rather than a bare web page. In addition to this, I seem to have recently taken up a second full-time job as spokesperson for Vista Content Security. If you feel the need for even more background info, there was a news story about all of this available that provided some more detail. But it seems to have expired from the paper site. In any case, count yourself lucky that the online version doesn't include the photo of me. Quotes. A few fun quotes provided for amusement value. I propose that each copy of the OS should ship with an orange jumpsuit and sensory deprivation goggles, since all Vista users have been unilaterally declared enemy combatants by the content apparatchiki. Daniel Nevin. Windows Vista? And what a Vista! All you see as you look around your garden is a 60-foot-high brick wall. Crosby Fitch. When you download licenses for protected content, you agree that Microsoft may include a revocation list with the licenses. Content owners may ask Microsoft to revoke the software's ability to use WMDRM to play or copy protected content. The Windows Vista EULA. Microsoft Researcher England has a bold plan to improve the PC and make it a secure delivery system for audio and video. England's solution involves making minor modifications to the PC's hardware to allow Microsoft to make a secure version of Windows Media Player. Essentially, this would turn the PC into a record player, as far as music is concerned. Microsoft Research News. This is obviously some strange worse use of the word improve, which I've previously been unaware of. Arthur Dent. Welcome to the new world of DRM, where expensive pieces of hardware across the world could potentially be remotely rendered useless by overzealous copyright holders. Way to go, Hollywood! Chip Mulligan. I can not only say that the idea of tilt bits is basically insane, but I can also see hardware manufacturers refusing to implement tilt bits, or more likely, faking their functionality. Dave Walker. I purchased a new DVD SACD player with HDMI output, surround sound receiver amp, non-HDMI input output, they're still too expensive for me, and LCD TV with HDMI input. My DVD SACD player was connected to the SS amp via nice single simple optical cable and HDMI cable to the TV. I figured that would be all I need, keeping a digital path all the way to the SS amp and TV. Wrong! It worked beautifully until I played my one and only SACD. No sound came forth. Huh? I read the DVD SACD player manual. In brief small print, when playing SACDs, audio output is only from the 5.1 channel RCA analog outputs. Anthony May. This is SACD silence, the purest silence known to man. It's premium and must be protected at all costs. Paul Stimson. I can't play back HD because I need to upgrade my two NVIDIA Quadro 4500s, they're $2,000 each, to a $200 FX7600 GT because it supports HDCP. I can't wait until someone cracks this DRM, HDCP, AACS crap. Sigh. I just had my first experience with HD content being blocked. I purchased an HP Media Center PC with a built-in HD DVD video player, together with a 24-inch high-definition 1920x1200 HP flat panel display. They even included an HD movie, The Bourne Supremacy. Sure enough, the movie won't play because while the video card supports HDCP content protection, the monitor doesn't. It plays if I connect it to an old 14-inch VGA CRT using the DVI to VGA connector. Roger Strong. When I disable my HD monitor, I can watch the movie on my old VGA screen, but what is the point of having an HD monitor and not being able to watch an HD movie on it? Muselix 64. Newsless64 was so upset at not being able to pay his legitimately purchased movies on his legitimately purchased monitor attached to his legitimately purchased player that he broke the AACS content protection just to be able to see his own movies. See, how effective is it really? With the HD DVD, I wasn't able to play back my movie on my non-HDCP HD monitor. Not being able to play a movie that I've paid for because some executive in Hollywood decided I cannot made me mad. I'm just an upset customer. My efforts can be called fair use enforcement. Muselik 64, author of the HD DVD and Blu-ray cracks. I built two Media Center PC 2005s, one for satellite and one for cable TV. Never had a problem recording my kids' shows. Upgraded to Vista MCA Ultimate, and like most people, not able to record their standard definition HBO, I cannot record the show Avatar, the latest Airbender. So obviously the technology existed, but now with Vista's DRM, it is now being enforced much more strictly than the previous operating systems Microsoft had made. Lupo. Thanks a lot, Muselik64, author of the HD DVD crack. You're not the only one with a monitor vid card that doesn't support HDCP. Your work is greatly appreciated. Yodoso. The funny thing is that I can't see how HDCP will actually even prevent piracy. In fact, the only thing I can see it doing is encouraging piracy, because everyone who's bought a new computer, monitor, HDTV in the last few years, which doesn't have HDCP, are now screwed out of several thousand dollars worth of purchases. So instead of buying new products, they will turn to pirated, cracked Blu-ray movies, which will work without the HDCP. Giza. The HDCP scheme will serve to make the illegal product the most full-featured and least restrictive, and thus the most attractive to the customer. Add in the expense of buying new equipment to view the legal content, when existing content equipment is perfectly capable, and the performance drain imposed by inline encryption decryption, and they've put out the biggest incentive to piracy yet. Greg. I'm actually going to skip through the remainder of these quotes, because they go on for quite some time. Footnotes. Note A. This comment was inspired by Sir Gerald Kaufman's similar comment about the British Labour Party's 1983 election manifesto, which resulted in Labour turning in its worst election results since its founding. It was so bad that Labour's opponents in the election reprinted and distributed it themselves. Maybe Apple could take a hint from this and use Microsoft's content protection details in their advertising for OS X. At 44 pages, Microsoft's Output Content Protection and Windows Vista document squeezes out Labour's 37-page manifesto to take the crown. Note B. This document uses cost in the sense of penalty, damage, harm, injury, and loss, rather than the more financial expense, outlay, and price. A full financial analysis would require top-to-bottom internal audits of the design, development, production, distribution, support, and legal costs for each vendor involved, something for which even the vendors themselves would have difficulty producing a precise figure. Note C. In order for the content to be displayed to users, it has to be copied numerous times. For example, if you're reading this document on the web, then it's been copied from the web server's disk drive to server memory, copied to the server's network buffer, copied across the internet, copied to your PC's network buffer, copied into the main memory, copied to your browser's disk cache, copied to the browser's rendering engine, copied to the render or screen cache, and finally, copied to your screen. If you've printed it out to read, several further rounds of copying have occurred. Windows Vista Content Protection, and DRM in general, assume that all of this copying can occur without copying actually occurring, since the whole intent of DRM is to prevent copying. If you're not versed in DRM doublethink, this concept gets quite tricky to explain, but in terms of quantum mechanics, the content enters a superposition, a simultaneously copied and uncopied state, until a user collapses its wave function by observing the content. In physics, this is called quantum indeterminacy, or the observer's paradox. Depending on whether you follow the Copenhagen or many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics, things that then either get weird or very weird. So in order for Windows Vista content protection to work, it has to be able to violate the laws of physics and create numerous copies that are simultaneously not copies. Someone has pointed out that Microsoft is trying to implement a quantum encryption channel in software that attempts to make premium content non-observable, detecting problem states and discontinuing transmission if any are observed. Note D. I'll make a prediction at this point that, given that it's trying to do the impossible, the Vista content protection will take less than a day to bypass, if the bypass mechanism is something like a driver bug or a simple security hole that applies only to one piece of code, and can therefore be quickly patched, and less than a week to comprehensively bypass in a driver hardware independent manner. This doesn't mean that it'll be broken the day or week that it appears, but simply that once a sufficiently skilled attacker is motivated to bypass the protection, it'll take them less than a day or a week to do so. Note E. There is SCMS, but it has all the effectiveness of a keep-out sign. Note F. If anyone wants to send me one of these amazing 27-inch monitors for evaluation purposes, I promise to evaluate it and return it by 2012. Note G. The question of how content producers, other than the major studios who can afford expensive custom equipment, are supposed to create and manipulate high-definition content has been raised by a number of readers. For example, one contributor who works with people in the content industry comments that, "I have seen smaller content producers going from just recording weddings and the like to ones that have gone all the way to make a full-featured movie. They have gone through problems like where to edit HD material, which cameras use, which format, etc. Their decisions have been based on the availability of equipment to make their projects, not really costs. It has been suggested that large content producers are quite happy with this situation, since it prevents any competition from more innovative, creative, and agile newcomers." Note H. I see some impressive class action suits to follow if this revocation mechanism, bricking, is ever applied. Perhaps Microsoft or the content providers will buy everyone who owns a device that inadvertently leaks content and then is disabled by the revocation process replacement hardware for their systems, although this will in turn trigger the WGA time bomb. For anyone who's read Guns of August, this situation seems a bit like pre-World War I Europe, with people sitting on step one of an enormously complex battle plan that can't be backed out of once it's triggered, no matter how obvious it is that going ahead with it is a bad idea. Driver revocation is a lose-lose situation for Microsoft, and they're in for serious pain whether they do or they don't. Their lawyers must have been asleep when they let themselves get painted into this particular corner. The first time some feature of Vista's content protection inadvertently takes it a hospital, foreign government department, air traffic control system, or whatever, they've guaranteed themselves a front row seat in court for the rest of their natural lives. Several people have suggested that this move was deliberate in order for the lawyers to guarantee themselves lifetime employment, but this seems highly unlikely. Firstly, lawyers have an obligation to protect their clients, so deliberately getting a client into trouble in order to generate more work would be a severely career-limiting move. Secondly, they're corporate in-house counsel rather than independent counsel, so they get paid anyway. Making more work for themselves wouldn't be a big priority for them. Note I. Some insider comments indicate that it'll be mid-2007, at least, before Vista's non-Microsoft graphics and sound drivers are finished enough to be stable and reliable. Vendors were still frantically trying to get drivers ready in time for Vista's release. They didn't even make it to the RTM media, and will have to be downloaded after the install. But even those have been described as beta quality at best. Now that Vista is publicly available, you can use Google to find all the problem reports arising from the not-quite-ready-yet drivers. Note J. The Enterprise and Ultimate editions of Vista do feature this kind of encryption, BitLocker. To quote Microsoft, all user and system files are encrypted, but the features of these high-end versions will never get into the hands of typical users. What's really important is to provide swap file encryption for all users of all versions of Vista, independent of whether or not they use BitLocker, since that's what contains copies of sensitive in-memory data. The OpenBSD approach of generating a random swap file encryption key at boot time and encrypting any memory data that gets paged to disk is the correct way to handle memory protection. Oddly enough, Windows Ready Boost does encrypt all data swapped to a USB drive, so the technology is present and active in Vista. It just doesn't seem to be enabled for disk swap files instead of USB swap. Note K. Video and audio playback aren't the only areas in which Vista's inner control freak comes to the fore. A Gamasutra article, Vista Casts a Pall on PC Gaming, looks at Vista's new Game Explorer feature, which subjects all games to parental controls. Any games vendor who can't afford to obtain an extremely expensive ESRB rating has their software treated as not rated, the equivalent of the MPAA's X rating for films, which originally was intended to mean not rated. For example, the multiple Oscar-winning Midnight Cowboy is an early example of an X-rated film, but has since become synonymous with hardcore porn. Midnight Cowboy was later re-rated as R. Obviously, any parent would like to would block not rated content, which means that anyone who can't afford to pay the ESRB, in any other words, any small independent games producers, including the ones most likely to produce free and low-cost family-rated games, can't work with Vista's Game Explorer. Alex St. John, Microsoft's gaming evangelist, calls the Game Explorer a roadblock right in the center of the screen that developers and users are going to have to maneuver around. This seems like yet another area of Vista in which the words anti-competitive and class action will feature prominently in the future. Note L. The Kool-Aid reference may be slightly unfamiliar to non-US readers. It's a reference to the 1978 Jonestown mass suicide in which Jim Jones's followers drank Flavor-Aid laced with poison in order to demonstrate their dedication to the cause. In popular usage, the term Kool-Aid is substituted for Flavor-Aid because it has more brand recognition. There's also an earlier, less well-known link to fruit juice laced with LSD. I'll avoid the obvious comment linking that and some of the thinking behind Vista's content protection. Note M. If I ever want to play back premium content, I'll wait a few years and then buy a $50 Chinese-made set-top player to do it, not a $1,000 Windows PC. It's somewhat bizarre that I have to go to Communist China in order to find vendors who actually understand the consumer's needs. A reductio ad absurdum solution to the premium content problem proposed by a Slashdot reader is to add support for Windows Vista for a black box hardware component that accepts as input encrypted compressed premium content and produces as output encrypted or otherwise protected decoded premium content. In other words, move the entire mass of hardware, driver, and software protection to a dedicated black box that's only used in media PCs, where it's arguably required. Now compare this add-on black box to the canonical Chinese-made $50 media player. Why would anyone buy the black box, which will almost certainly cost more than $50, merely as an add-on to their already expensive PC, when they can buy a complete, dedicated media player that does the same thing and more? A BBC World Service commentator agrees people will just buy dedicated players instead of using Vista. In fact, the entire market's reaction to Windows Media Center PCs has been a single, colossal yawn, with HP, the last remaining major MCE vendor, dropping its entire product line in early 2007. What's left now is a bunch of niche players making niche products, but they're not HP or Dell or Gateway or Alienware for that matter. In other words, they're not a mass market product. And as HP Channel developer Doug Robert put it in a piece of doublespeak that would make any politician proud, this is not a statement about Media Center PCs. It doesn't mean that Media Center isn't going to be successful. It's just that we're discontinuing development. End quote. Compare this with something like the MediaGate 350, a Korean-made player that's small, silent, fits in with current AV gear, plays back HD video at full 1080p resolution over a DVI connector, with no DRM encumbrance anywhere in sight. This player, just one example of many currently available, is everything that a Media Center PC isn't. Inexpensive, silent, small, fits to the living room, and non-crippled. It's not surprising that vendors are discontinuing development of Media Center PCs. It's possible that people in countries conditioned to region-locked, minimal functional DVD devices may not understand the appeal of one of these low-cost players. For about $50, you'd get a totally region-free PAL plus NTSC DVD player, upscaling to 1080i, that plays pretty much anything you can get onto a CD or DVD, not just the usual DVD, VCD, and SVCD formats, but also MPEG-4, DivX, XVID, and so on. Another $10 to $20, and you get features like SD compact flash card readers, a USB interface, 1080p, and DVI and HDMI output. So without a slightly more expensive player and an external USB drive or SD card to hold the content, I get everything that Microsoft is promising us for Vista, but without any crippling and without the high cost, size, and ungainliness of a full-blown PC in my living room. It's really no contest. That's the end. See you next week.